Hello and welcome to another Music Ally Focus with me, Music Ally's editor, Joe Sparrow. And in this episode, we're joined by Alex Mubert, founder of the Mubert AI Generative Music Platform. And we talk about using AI to make music and what impact creative musical AI will have on rights holders and whether we have to redefine what music itself is in an era where infinitely long pieces of music can be tailor-made for every single listener. All that coming up in 1 minute's time. Now, each Music Ally Focus episode analyzes one meaningful music business topic at a time. And so this podcast is going to be quick as well. It should take about the same amount of time as André Ortolf of Germany could hypothetically drink 50 kilos of mustard. André gulped down 1,083 grams, that's 32.2 ounces, Imperial fans, of mustard in 30 seconds in 2019. And sure, why not? Now, talking of swallowing something challenging, most of us have now come to terms with the fact that generating music with AI is simply part of the music-making landscape these days. Alex Mubert's eponymous company was one of the early AI music platforms, and he has plenty of experience to lean on when we ask questions about how AI music will change things. He believes, for instance, that mass adoption of generative music as a creative tool will be through video content creators who may like to co-create music for their videos with an AI trained on their favorite artist. And he also talks about how the inclusion of AI music could change the dynamic around how much money is generated by streaming platforms. Right, let's go over and chat to Alex right now. So I'm very happy to welcome to the podcast Alex Mubert, the founder of Mubert, the AI generative music platform. Hi, Alex.
Hello. Hello. How are you?
I'm good. Good to see you, and thanks for joining us. We're going to talk about the use of generative AI music and what it means, what it's doing, what you've been doing as a very early established platform in this space. But first of all, before we get into that, can you explain who you are and what Mubert as a platform does?
Okay. So once again, my name is Alex Mubert, and together with my talented co-founder, Paul Gordon, we share the role of CEO. And for the last 7 years already, we have been developing Mubert, which is the software that generates music. Quite easy. Yeah, and we started as the application that helps to sleep better, to be more focused, run faster with the help of personalized soundscapes. And then we moved the focus to the creator economy and created the huge infrastructure that contains the marketplace, an API, the studio for producers, and also the fingerprinting system. So, and all that is based on the engine that we have and the data set of 2.5 million sounds that we own. So we have bought all the rights for the sounds, and we have collaborated with hundreds of musicians to do that. And all that we do to democratize the music.
Yeah. So it's a generative music platform, and the music that's generated is based on sounds that you own that is then fed into the machine, and then out comes the infinite music of your choice, right? That's
correct.
How it works. Yep. Yeah. Can you then, obviously you're doing a lot of things there, and a lot of complicated technology working together. So can you, in a sort of tangible sense, give us a clear example of where the music that Mubert is making is, who's using it and how are they using it?
Sure. Let's divide into two parts. So as we provide an API solution to many commercial applications, so we know the numbers, and around 30% are the well-being and sound healing applications, and around 60% are the apps for creators, which include the streaming services like the video editing tools, UGC tools, and the rest are like various use cases, from like public spaces to NFT collections, metaverses, and even the websites.
Yeah, lots of different users there and different use cases. Some of them are easy to understand. You have public places, you want some music, you define what you want, and they stream it, and it's always changing, and
infinite playlist. And then other things, you know, on at the sort of user generated content end. So this is perhaps YouTubers who want a piece of music for their videos, and they, how would they generate that? Would they go to use MuBit, or would they use it through the API to say, I want music that sounds like this genre, this BPM, and then generate a track? Is that how that works?
Yeah, aside the API, which is like sold commercially for the B2B client, we have the main application, which is called MuBit Render, and it's being used by the content creators to generate the music of certain genre, mood, duration, and also they can use the text prompt. So it's the most popular actually feature on the moment at the moment on the website. So yeah, they can generate the soundtrack for their video, for example, and get the easy license to use this track on YouTube. And we can guarantee like that 100% it's royalty-free music. So they can just imagine what they want. They can like text the text prompt and get the music.
Right. And so, and is from a sort of, let's say, from a creator perspective, like these, let's pick a YouTuber as an example. The text-based prompt where they say, oh, I want a piece of music that is upbeat, but this and that and that. That's the way in for a lot of people who are perhaps non-musicians but want a piece of music, right? Do you have any applications or uses of it of people who are also making music and sort of incorporating what's created?
Yeah, we have the software for the music content creators, which is called MuBit Studio. And it was actually the first application that we have developed. So this application lets you as the musician to upload your sounds to our data set and then to create the generative channels. And now we are using this app for, structuring the data set that we have. But there are already like 10,000 musicians there on this platform, but it's still right in beta.
Yeah. Okay. And you recently announced as a company that the software has generated 100 million tracks, which is a huge number and a really big milestone, right? We wrote about it on Music Ally. And that in that 100 million is over 56 million, I think, which was created by users of who are, I guess, prompting the software to generate music. My first question is then, what is the other 45 million, if you like? So you've, of that 100 million, over half is made by users, and the other half is what? Is this, how do you define what is a track and what isn't?
So mostly they are the tracks that are generated, for example, for the well-being applications, where they are used like the soundtracks for, I don't know, jogging, sleeping, meditating, like making some workouts. And also we calculated there the application that was the first one. So we used to, actually, that was also the well-being application where they listen to the same channels for sleeping, meditating, and so on. So yeah, that's like, let's say we have generated 100 million tracks, which are the, we call them tracks, but they are not the tracks, because MuBit generates music like infinitely with no stops, with no pauses. So it's something like we have created the new kind of content, you know, so which is like real time generated.
Right, which is what I was going to ask you, because it's, yes, you if you use MuBit, and I'll put a link obviously below the podcast to the things you've mentioned and people can try it out, but if you use it, you sort of press a button and music happens, you know, it's infinite. So this is almost a philosophical question. Do we have to sort of redefine what a track is? And then do we also have to redefine what a song is if it's a piece of music that's ongoing?
You know, personally, I do believe into the content will be like significantly changed in the future. So the content of the future, or let's say the music of the future, is the real-time generated, it's personalized. It's interactive. It's adapting to like any inputs that you have. And when the, you know, AR or XR, they will like become the huge part of our lives. All around us will become the real-time generated content. So, and at that moment, you know, the Spotify, the tracks, they will be like the vintage for us. So they will like definitely, they will be the like the most important part of the music industry. But the content that is produced by users, the content that surrounds us as the users of metaverses, I don't know, the content which is like applied to some kind of, you know, like, let's say NFTs or YouTube videos or Twitch streams, could be like real-time generated and interactive also. It could be used as the collaborative tool. It could be used as the co-creation tool with the famous artists. That's how I see the music of the future.
Yeah. So essentially we're sort of perhaps entering a world where there's, if you like, two forms of music, both equally important in different ways. You've got the traditional sort of catalog of pop songs, which are these standalone things that people revisit. But then there's also just a sort of infinitely possible changing reactive form of music, which is not about 3-minute songs that are a story and define something in itself. It's more of a sort of, I'm not saying atmospheric, I know it's more than that, but it's something else. It's a whole new sort of space that isn't really there at the moment.
There is the term that's like soundscape, but I more believe into the, you know, that soundscape is not interactive. It's like something that surrounds us, but the content of the future is more like user-generated and more interactive with me, more personalized to me. So that's, we should find the new word for that.
Yeah. Yeah. And these prompts could be based on, these personal prompts could be based on anything from what you're doing in a video game or a metaverse space to your pulse rate from your smartwatch or location in the world or anything really, I guess.
Correct. And that's why I think that we should establish the connections with the major labels and with the artists, because this will make this content sound very familiar to, you know, to the popular songs that you can still listen on the Spotify. But you can become the co-creator with the famous artist. Just imagine that, for example, I'm the YouTube blogger and I would like to generate 10 minute track to, which is like something between Grimes and the portion of Hans Zimmer and the portion of Prodigy drums. And I can just imagine what I want and I will get the 10 minute track and I can use it like for free or for some commission. With no headache with the legal licenses because it's real-time generated track. So that's why I think that the labels could find the new, you know, let's say business model or the new opportunity to become the leaders on the new market, which is like the market of this fluid music, which is generated
fluid
now.
Music. Yeah. Yeah. I like that term. You've mentioned one impact there, that a major label could, for instance, say, okay, I'm going to license out the music of Taylor Swift and, I don't know, the Prodigy or whatever, whoever they've got, and say, right, now these can now be used as catalogs to generate music, right? And that's, an agreement could be worked out to generate income. And you can see perhaps how that would be very appealing to people. But what other ways could creative AI offer an opportunity to these major labels as well?
You know that I'm like always joking that like 5 years ago when I started this, you know, when I like moved Uber to the creator economy, the main question was what's the role of AI in creator economy? So that was the main question. And today, the question is, what's the role of creators in AI economy? Because as we see, for example, the Midjourney or some other like text prompt generating models for images, they use the copyrighted content. So I know that, I know like few cases that like completely show us that the rights of the like visual artists are not saved. So their content is used to generate the content in Midjourney, and they have no compensation. So it's like the innovation without compensation, let's say like that. And but I do believe that the major labels, and they are like doing completely right, that they try to save the artists from this illegal usage of their content, but it's very hard to do. And that's why they should like, I think that the best way for them is to like become the leaders in the AI industry with their content. They can do it because they own all the rights for this content. They can establish the revenue railways to distribute revenue between the musicians. They can, you know, have the statistic data, how much the content was used and how much we should pay for the each particular artist. They can establish the connections with the, let's say, Facebook, Pixart, Twitch, YouTube, all these, you know, platforms that are using the content. And they can, like, become the leaders in this industry by, like, collaborating with the platformers like Mebird. Because we're, like, our vision and our infrastructure is about, you know, creating the connection, the bridge between the copyrighted content and the end user. So we have all the statistic data. We have started to create this revenue distribution system. We have all the fingerprinting system. We have everything around the watermarks. So that's why, like, each content that is generated on Mebird and used commercially, we know like all the samples, all the derivative samples, all the new sounds that we use to generate this particular track. We know all the like copyright owners of this particular sounds or samples or loops or instruments. Mm. So we're like soon planning to launch the system which will dramatically increase the data set. By, you know, generating the new sounds based on your one. You can just upload one sample and we will like create different variations, different instruments, melodies, and so on based on your sound. So imagine that you are the musician. Myself, I'm the musician and I'm not the producer. So I never produce music, but I play the musical instruments. I have the jazz music education and I used to play the double bass. I play it on the same stage with Massive Attack, with Red Snapper, but I've never done the whole track. So I'm the bass player, I'm the bass synth player, so I can play Moog, I can play different kinds of bass guitars, double basses, everything. And that's why I'm dreaming that these standalone musicians like me, they can be involved in the process of worldwide music creation by just uploading their, you know, super high quality sounds of the double bass, and then Mebird can generate the derivative samples based on your double bass sounds. So just imagine how that could work. And that's how I see the participation of the major labels. They can give us the opportunity to generate the new samples based on the famous ones, but not to use this content which is like protected. So let's keep this content on Spotify. And let's create the new content for the creator economy by using AI tools.
Right. Okay. And do you know then in that situation? I mean, that sounds really interesting because it would give people a touchstone. They would say, yeah, like you said, I wanted to sound like this and this. Do you then know how that would work in terms of payment for the rights holders? Have you got a plan for that?
Yeah, of course. We just take the platform fee. And the rest is distributed among the musicians. So that's how it should work. The same as Patreon, for example. We're just the platform.
Yeah. And does that work on a sort of a royalty basis? Or is it when a song is created, a fee is generated and sent to the rights holders of that of those pieces of musical samples?
When it's used like once, for example, when the track is purchased for YouTube, for example, you cannot get the royalties there because all the music is royalty free there. But for example, if for example, Spotify can distribute royalties for the AI generated tracks, why not? they also could become popular. But I'm more believe in the platforms like BandLab. You know them, I think. So they are like something like MySpace, but from the future world. So they allow you to generate the track, to create the track, and then to share this track with your audience. And I see that it's like very popular among the young people. And but I think that there could be also the monetization, like let's say royalty-based monetization on these kinds of websites, where you can share your content and you can like get paid in crypto or in some kind of tokens or in money. It doesn't matter. So, but you can pay for listening this track. So I think that both could work, and we just need the right database, which can, you know, get all this information. But at the moment, to be honest, we cannot establish the connection with the YouTube content ID. And at the moment, we are like struggling. So this 100 million of tracks is huge. And mostly they are used on some kind of content. And sometimes we're struggling that there are like false positive strikes from YouTube or Twitch. That this content is copyright protected, and we need to establish this connection with them, because you know, the amount of music will be like much more higher in the future, and we need to have the software on their side that will like detect that this content generated by Mubert, you can use it or you cannot use it, or you can monetize this content or you cannot. And we cannot like track the usage of our content on TikTok, on YouTube, on Twitch. We just we can just track the usage on our own platform. So that's why we should move like forward together.
Yeah. And going back to sort of the bigger picture then of users, the sort of general music fan, you know, the people who at the moment, perhaps they open Spotify and they hit a playlist that is like a running playlist or a, relaxation playlist. Do you think that we're going to see a sort of transition in their behavior to they will be happy to open an app, maybe a streaming platform, and hit a button and listen to generative music, and they don't mind that it's not a series of songs that have been compiled into a playlist, but it's instead generative music that goes on so they can listen to a specific type of techno while they're working, and maybe they can tweak some sliders? Do you think that's what people want and will go for?
For some of the use case, yes, completely. So, for example, I've started this application as the app for runners, actually. But when you run, you have like two troubles. So the first is the playlist that always like change, that always like change the pace. You need to play the tracks, you need to serve them and so on. And the second is the energy. So I think that generative music is not so energetic at the moment as it could be. And as the like famous tracks are, it's because of the mastering, because of the, you know, these sounds that always use, because of the vocals. You know, when you run, for example, with Rage Against the Machine, he's like crying so much loud. So you have a lot of energy when you listen to this kind of music. But generative music is like quite, you know, it's more about the music, which is more for working, for focusing. That's how, for example, Andal works, and that's how we started. So we have a lot of users who use Mubert as the background for working. So a lot of developers, software developers, designers, I don't know. So it was like a huge use case. But I think that mass adoption will be through the content creators, because they like really need they really need the features that generative music provides. They need the flexibility. They need the the opportunity to interact with the music, to input something from their own mind into this music, like co-create it, and I think that mass adoption will be through the content creators. But for streaming services, it's quite, it could a little bit change the monetization.
Because, well, I was going to say, it could be tempting, right? If you could, if you embed that into your streaming app and you get people to stream that music for an hour, it's that's a different, that's a different thing than getting people to stream music which is licensed for an hour, isn't it?
Yeah, 6 years ago, I was staying in the office of Pandora in California, in San Francisco. And I was like showing the, you know, the paper where I was, you know, sketching that. Just put one song between two of your songs, which is AI generated, and you reduce cost like 30%. You reduce cost by 30%. So that's how it could work, but it doesn't work like that at the moment.
Yeah, but it could. And,
it could,
I mean, it's yes, and we'll see. It'll be very interesting to see what how that actually pans out in terms of adoption. And then it's just one more question then, in terms of artists. I remember 8 years ago, Massive Attack, who you've played with, released an app called Phantom. And it was cutting edge at the time where they released music through this app and you got to hear the new songs through the app. And depending on the lighting conditions of where you are, the movement, it would remix the song on the fly. That's not quite generative music. But can you, it was very good and it worked well. Can you see can you see a future where artists we know of that sort of caliber, that size, are perhaps willing to incorporate at a very high level AI generated music as part of, not just like a sample of some AI generated music in their work, but putting it out there and saying, this is my new release?
Yep. True believe in that. So we did some experiments. We did the AI-generated raves, where the rave was based by the samples of the Atemtian from Berlin. It was the huge, you know, techno rave, and the music was quite good. And we like developed the albums for different musicians that are AI-generated. Let's say they are not AI-generated, but they are generated by using AI algorithms as well. And Andel, for example, they can release the music of like some famous artists, but this music is for sleep. So it's the functional music based on your, based on the artist's wants. And yeah, I do believe that in the future, so now they have to release the albums on Spotify, and Spotify doesn't allow you, you know, to release the music on Spotify. It's something crazy. So you need to be signed by the label, or if you're independent, you need to use this DistroKid. And I know that a lot of musicians are struggling with this software. You need to wait like a week. You cannot change everything. So it's quite struggling to distribute music. And you can distribute just the audio file. But when the BandLab, for example, or some metaverse will be super popular, and it will have a lot of users, like the Sandbox, for example, or some video games, and you will have to release the album there because the audience is already there.
Yeah.
You will think about it. You will. It will remind you, you know, the platforms, like it will remind you the album of Massive Attack, of Brian Eno, and of other artists, how they did it.
Yeah, interesting, yeah. Okay, thanks. Well, look, I will put some links to Mubit and the various projects that you're doing next to the podcast, and people can check it out. But before we go, the question I ask all my guests is, what is your favorite piece of music of all time? I think with you, I should clarify, what is your favorite piece of human music of all time?
I actually like the rock music. So I prefer, you know, this rock band and the jazz music. I like to listen to the music which has a lot of soul. Because the electronic music for me is something for the, you know, for the parties or for the background while I'm working. But to be honest, when I'm in the airplane, I have the playlist which contains of like Rage Against the Machine, like Deep Purple, Led Zeppelin.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. So I like this kind of music.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. You can take that playlist. That's good. Okay. So Alex Mubit, thank you very much.
Likewise, thank you.
Thanks again to Alex. And if you would like to check out Moobit and what he and his platform is doing, the link is below the podcast. If you found it useful, please do share it on with someone else who you think will get something out of it. And if you want to get in touch with me, I would, of course, love to hear from you. You can email me on joe, J-O-E, at musically.com. We also have a free weekly email called The Knowledge, which flops into your inbox every Friday, and it rounds up bits and pieces of the best analysis, news, marketing insight, and skills from across all of Music Ally's industry-leading services. The sign-up link is below the podcast, and you can sign up and impress all of your friends. So that's it. Thanks for listening. Thanks for joining us here on the Music Ally Focus podcast as ever. I've been Joe Sparrow. You've been you. And until next time, farewell.